What if the one thing that could save your life was something that you were told to avoid your entire career? If you've ever felt like you've tried everything, the VA appointments, prescriptions, therapy, and still feel like you're stuck in the dark, you're not alone. The pain, the nightmares, the hopelessness, it wears you down. Now, imagine a different outcome. Imagine waking up without that constant weight on your chest, being present with your family, sleeping through the night, actually feeling like yourself again. Today's guest, Sam Peterson, walked that same road. He went from an EOD team leader in the Army to nearly pulling the trigger himself. He found healing through unconventional methods, ones the VA often won't even acknowledge. Ketamine, TMS, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and yes, even psychedelics. Sam isn't here to sell you a miracle. He's here to tell the truth about what actually works when nothing else seems to be working. But before we dive into this episode and this important conversation, make sure you're subscribed to the email newsletter at driveonpodcast.com/subscribe. You'll get my 5 favorite episodes sent straight to your inbox. No fluff, just the best insights to help you drive on. I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you want to learn more or find out how you can support this mission, visit gwattmemorialfoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Sam, welcome to the show. It's really great to have you here. I'm looking forward to this conversation, and yeah, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate being here, and happy to get onto this topic because it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into the important side, I mean, not that this isn't an important side, but share a little bit about yourself and your background, your journey as a EOD guy, and kind of what led you into the mental health space, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, it was pain that brought me here. You know, EOD is one of the coolest jobs that you can possibly have in the military. You know, you get to play around with explosives, you get to play around with robots, you get to put on this big green bomb suit and go cut wires on IEDs. You know, it's super dangerous, but there's nothing like that kind of risk and that kind of imminent death that just focuses you into the present moment. Yeah. And just makes everything blur out. It is like the ultimate flow state job as an EOD team leader, with just some serious consequences if you screw it up. But you know, the one thing that the recruiters don't tell you, they show you all the videos. Oh yeah, robots and explosions, let's go. And it also has the highest suicide rate of any job in the military.
Yeah.
Because of all of the exposure to traumatic blast waves. And even just like the NFL, where we're watching people get chronic traumatic encephalopathy, you know, just from all those hits, even the innocuous ones are causing micro tears in your neurons. The same thing is happening, just with a more energetic force, when you're dealing with a blast wave. So, you know, how I got here was, you know, I almost committed suicide after I got back from my second tour. It was one of my friends saved my life. Like, the only reason I'm here is because my phone went off in my pocket when I was about to pull the trigger. And that night changed my life forever, because he brought me over and he's like, hey man, like, you're super fucked up, we can all tell. Pours out some MDMA on the table and he's like, I'd never done drugs before. I thought they put holes in your brain. I completely believed what the dare lion told us for all those years. And I was like, man, you know, whatever, I'm gonna go put a big fucking hole in my brain if this doesn't work, so whatever. So I did it, and I sat down on that couch and I just opened up and I bawled my eyes out for like 3 hours, and it was one of the most cathartic moments I've ever had in my life up to that point. I got to feel joy for the first time, and I was able to just shed this yoke of all of the shit that was built up from years and years and years. And that experience, you know, completely saved my life and changed it at the same time. And I didn't really understand the impact of that until about 5 months later. I was talking to one of my mentors in the motor pool. It was Memorial Day. We were about to go out to a field problem, you know, go home for the weekend. We come back on Monday. We're, you know, on Memorial Day Monday, driving out to the range, and we get a call that Neil walked out into his backyard and blew his head off with his 3-year-old son in the house. I was the last guy to talk to him at the unit, and you would never know. He was, you know, we all, yeah, I'm sure you experienced this too. There's some of those E8s, those senior enlisted guys that are just happy all the time. And we're in an environment where everyone's kind of a disgruntled jackass after a while. They're just happy to be there. They're super encouraging. Well, imagine that guy in your unit making that decision. And it was just soul crushing. And it made me fucking angry because I know that if Neil had had the same kind of experience that I had had, he would still be alive today. And that's why I've dedicated, you know, my professional career to helping veterans and first responders have those kind of meaningful experiences and to actually recover from these invisible wounds, because all of this stuff is really, really treatable. We get fed a line of bullshit by the traditional medical establishment, by the VA, that if you have a TBI or PTSD, it is a mark you wear for the rest of your life, and all we can do is manage symptoms. That is bullshit.
Yeah.
We can absolutely heal and rewire the brain, and we figured it out. It's honestly not that hard. And, you know, my whole professional career is dedicated to that. One, bringing awareness to these issues, and two, helping to heal the brains, the minds, and the spirits of veterans and first responders, and collecting the data so that I can put it into my little data forge, like, you know, pound it into a spear and shove it down the VA's fucking throat. You might want to cut that part out.
No, that's okay, because you know what? It's honest. It's, you know, and I appreciate that, because so many people that I talk to, myself included, have had bad experiences with the VA. I mean, I had a situation personally where I had to wait like 3 months for a mental health appointment with the VA. And when I went in, the guy that I was talking to, he was like, you're actually lucky to be here right now. You know, in this point, like, I should be, you know, grateful that they finally opened their doors and saw me. And it's like, honestly, I don't feel all that lucky to be here right now. Like, I would have felt lucky, you know, 3 months ago when I asked for the appointment, if I got in and, you know, I got in right away and everything. But like, you make someone wait that long, it seems just like, no, that's not lucky. That's, you know, it seemed like he was almost like talking down to me, almost like I'm like a little kid or something. Like it was just a bunch of, it turned me off, put it that way.
Totally.
Really turned me off and pissed me off, quite frankly. And so, you know, other people have had similar stories where they've had that same thing. And I'm not saying, you know, discount the whole VA because of this one experience, right? And there's other experiences that people have had that are like that. But there are also people who've had good experiences too. So I'm not totally knocking the VA. They have some work to do, though. That much I gotta put out there, you know. But, you know, for what you guys are doing is, you know, you're raising awareness of this. And I think that's necessary for a few reasons, because a lot of times people just go to their doctor and just accept whatever the doctor says, whether it's physical health, mental health, whatever. They just accept, hey, they're the doctor, they know best, we're just going to accept it. But then if you go into your doctor, again, physical health or mental health, doesn't matter, and you say, hey, there's this other treatment available, doesn't seem like you guys are offering this, what's the deal? Hopefully that gets on their radar and they start investigating it themselves. And then hopefully they're going to want to start offering
it's getting there. And I think there's some pretty big distinctions to make that people don't really realize about the VA. So like the first thing, here's how I describe the VA. The VA is a loose affiliation of Greek city states that are governed by the myth of policies that don't actually exist. every VA is different. They have different processes for different things. They have different thresholds for how they utilize community care. Mm-hmm. And they have kind of a different set of standards. There's not some giant guiding principle that unifies the entire VA. And you can figure this out pretty quickly. If you go to the VA and ask them to pull up their policies and procedures, no one can find them.
Right.
They literally don't have access to a unifying doctrine of medicine. If you were to go to any civilian hospital network, HCA is a perfect example, one of the largest for-profit hospitals in the country. My wife works for them. You can go into HCA's share drive and you can pull out any policy and procedure that they have. It's right there at your fingertips. The VA doesn't have that. And that's part of the reason that you see care in these different places look so drastically different.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to the Tucson VA down in Arizona and it will be completely different from the Phoenix VA, which is one of the worst ones. And there's no crosstalk.
Should I tell you which VA I was?
Which VA were?
It was the Phoenix VA.
Oh, man. Oh, dude. Okay. Three worst VAs. I'd have to say Phoenix, Fayetteville, North Carolina, and Denver's right under there.
Okay.
And there's just levels of bureaucracy that are built up for no reason.
Sure.
Like I was trying to get one of my really good friends, former Marine, Purple Heart recipient, this guy fell off the trauma tree and hit every branch on the way down with his face. And I was trying to get him into our comprehensive program, which does TMS, ketamine, and HBOT. And they told him at the Denver VA that they don't do out-of-state referrals. And I was like, the fuck you don't.
Mm.
This is a regionally organized system. Like, absolutely you do out-of-state referrals. You literally have to send people out-of-state for inpatient, like, to go to a VA program. Mm. And that's, you know, I'm hoping that was the last administration. That was in 2024. I'm really hopeful that we're going to see an evolution in this system. And I think that Doug Collins is doing a great job laying that out, getting into psychedelics, doing some more research on these things.
Yeah.
I can't wait until the day where our treatment protocol is the standard of care instead of something that we have to continually fight with them about.
Yeah. You know, I heard him talking about some of the things that he's trying to do, and, you know, some of the stuff, his hands may be tied. There's legislation that prevents him from doing X, Y, or Z. And okay, so then maybe you have to go to Congress and say, hey, let's change some laws and let's get that done that way. But that's a bigger fight probably. But there's a lot of stuff that's like procedural or policy things that this is just the way we do it. Well, let's change the way we do it. If it doesn't make sense, let's change it. And that's the kind of attitude that I was getting from him. And it seems like that's the right direction to go, because if you're following a policy just for the sake of following a policy, because that's the way it's always been done, but it doesn't make any sense, why are you doing it, right? Like, let's change that policy and do something different, right?
Well, nobody asks those questions. Or
yeah,
if we're getting these results, if we're seeing 20, you know, 22 veterans a day committing suicide, and those are just the veterans within the VA system, we have to ask ourselves, where the hell is all the suicide prevention money going?
That's right. Yeah.
And I talked to the head of the suicide hotline. And I was like, Matt, you know what you need to do to limit veteran suicide? It's really fucking easy. All you need to do is make it so that your LPCs, the guys who are answering the level two calls, those calls that go from the first level of triage up to the second level, give those providers the ability to put in a community care referral. You will watch suicides plummet. Instead, we're putting them back into a system that's overloaded, overburdened, and doesn't have the resources to reach all of these veterans. And we know that already. That's why community care exists.
Yeah.
And furthermore, we need to take a really, really hard look at the VA formulary for treating depression, anxiety, and PTSD, because it is not built in the best interest of veterans at all. And here's a prime example. So, two axioms of medicine. First one, do no harm. Pretty simple.
Sure.
Second one, least invasive procedure to most invasive procedure when you're treating. Let's take the treatment of major depressive disorder as an example. The VA recommends in their formula, for their formulary for treating major depressive disorder, the VA recommends electroconvulsive therapy above transcranial magnetic stimulation. So if anybody who hasn't heard of electroconvulsive therapy, it is incredibly invasive. You go in, you are put under general anesthesia, and electrodes are placed on your head, you're asleep, and they induce a seizure. So that happens 3 times a week. It has a litany of side effects. Is it effective? Yes, it's 80% effective at treating major depressive disorder. But you can lose your memories. You can't work while you're doing it. You have to have a ride to and from. It's incredibly invasive. Mm-hmm. Let's contrast that with transcranial magnetic stimulation, something we do here. With that, we're putting a helmet or a coil on your head. It's outpatient. There's no anesthetic, no anesthesia required. We're stimulating the brain and increasing the density of neurons in your prefrontal cortex in a very, very targeted manner, about the size of a dime or a quarter. And that's something you can come in, bam, 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 you're done in 30 minutes, you walk out, you're good to go. You actually feel a little bit more energized. At least I did when I did it. That has a 75% efficacy rate for treating major depressive disorder. And the VA places ECT ahead of that in the formulary. That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, again, is just one of those things where it's probably just always been done that way. So let's just keep it that way and status quo and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Maybe. I don't know. But
yeah, there's some grease in the wheels that's going on.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, there's probably follow the money and you'll probably find some other reasons, too, that people are doing certain things, right?
Like, have you heard? You've heard of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, yeah. Right? Yeah. So did you know that there are, so the DOD and the VA hate hyperbaric, right? They, even though if you look at all of the studies, like if you look at the preponderance of the evidence, it's radically in favor. People get better, even in the studies where they try to say it doesn't work. The only reason that the VA and the DOD don't like hyperbaric is three studies. It's three studies that used one outcome measure each. They used a self-reported outcome measure, nothing else. And in 2 out of the 3 studies, everyone got better. Hmm. And they said it was the placebo effect and that it's a strong recommendation against. Like, those studies need to be torn up and the people who wrote them need to have their PhDs revoked. I've told this to the scientists who did it.
Yeah.
That's what in research, in clinical research, that is a drastic, what's called a type 2 error. A failure to notice or a failure to give credence to a clinical effect that's happening. Whereas a type 1 error is saying that there's something clinical happening that's not happening. This is a type 2 and it is egregious. Luckily, we have people like Dr. Dutiri down in Tampa who's doing the largest HBOT study that's ever been done. And he's getting blood samples and all sorts of metrics to show how this is affecting the physiology of our veterans who are suffering from TBI.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard such great things about the hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It's incredible. Like, from football players who their mind was all over the place after years of taking those hits over and over and over again, especially before equipment has improved to help reduce that. It's still not great, but yeah. It's better than what it used to be anyways, but you know, better than not wearing anything.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, sure. But you know, they went through, you know, series of treatments with this, and it's like their mind is clear and they're able to, mm-hmm. you know, do things that they weren't able to do before. And it's amazing. Like, when you get those types of results from people. And then take someone like yourself or other people that you work with, you know, always around explosions. That's got to be bad for your brain, you know, with all that stuff rattling around. And, you know, when you have those types of situations happening where you're constantly taking those hits, whether they're the physical hits of, you know, a football player or, you know, getting blown up or the shockwave blast that's coming in, you know, from a, you know, an explosion, even if you're at a distance, that shockwave still travels and that's going to have an effect on your brain.
And it makes these nice little micro tears.
Yeah. And the more that they happen, the more tears they are, the bigger they get and all that kind of stuff. And it's crazy that they won't use some of those treatments. So
it's just a matter of like, you got to get your little, this is the reason that treating people effectively isn't enough on its own. You have to collect the data.
Yeah.
You have to show them, like with our program, our average time to reach full symptom remission, and I'm defining that as a 75% reduction in PTSD, depression, anxiety, and TBI symptoms. That reduction in symptoms is 75%. That we're seeing that happen in 14 to 17 days.
Wow.
And you have to gather that data so you can just beat people over the head with it. And I've had conversations with, you know, physicians from Yale where they try to beat me over the head with the VA formulary. And I'm like, no. You guys don't get it. Like, what you're doing, what talk therapy and med management do is, well, talk therapy, we're trying to rewire the brain. But one thing that they don't really pay attention to, and I feel like modern medicine just continues to miss the ball on this, is that anxiety, depression, PTSD, TBI, all of these are highly, highly inflammatory to the brain. You are creating a non-permissive environment for your brain to rewire. You're literally trying to engage in a process that's highly energy intensive and in a neurotoxic environment, because that's what happens in your brain. Your brain becomes neurotoxic after long enough in being in these states, these long-term states of depression, anxiety, PTSD, and TBI.
Right.
Unless you get to that root cause, unless you down-regulate that inflammation in the brain, you are pissing in the wind and you are wasting that patient's fucking time.
Yeah. Time, and not just the time for the patient, but the doctor who could be helping somebody else, you know, doing something else, you know, or the therapist, the counselor, you know, there's other things that they could be doing. And wait, you know, if you're wasting... That's wasting everybody's time and money and other resources that are out there. So, you know, I want to get back into kind of some of the treatments that you guys
yep.
do. And you know, you talked a little bit about some of the stuff in your personal experience, your personal life.
But yep.
what is like some of the more effective treatments that you guys have discovered and kind of through your research and things like that? Mm-hmm. You know, for TBIs, PTSD, depression, anxiety, all those things, what are some of the more effective things that are being implemented and you know, how do they work and why do they work, maybe?
Oh, yeah. I can get into this all day. This is my happy place.
It's your sweet spot.
It's my sweet spot. Yeah. So we use a combination of culturally competent talk therapy. That's important. Ketamine infusion therapy, transcranial magnetic stimulation, and hyperbaric oxygen therapy. We put all of those together in a comprehensive treatment protocol. That treatment protocol can heal and rewire the brain simultaneously. So I'm going to go through each one of those. We'll start with ketamine. So one of the reasons that ketamine is a great upfront treatment is because it acts so quickly. Within 1 to 2 infusions, and that's like a couple of days. So within 3 days, you can take someone who's got seriously acute symptoms and bring them pretty damn close to baseline.
Okay.
Because ketamine downregulates inflammation in the brain and it increases neuroplasticity. So that's the process of your neurons branching out and creating new synaptic connections. That's really, really useful for a number of reasons. I already touched on the inflammatory problem in the brain. You know, that also causes additional shunting within your neurons if it's been going on long enough, if it's more chronic enough. So ketamine is a great primer. It's taking that inflammation down, getting your brain ready for these other treatments. Now, ketamine alone is not a magic pill. It works for a while, but you know that inflammatory cascade starts to creep back up after a while. So ketamine is something we use as a primer. It's something we use as an initial treatment to get our patients, you know, feeling better immediately. You know, imagine these guys who, you know, have been in the hurt box, so to speak, for a fucking decade.
Yeah.
The best way to get someone to buy in when they're in that much pain is to just make it go away. And they're like, oh, wow, okay. Tell me what else I need to do. We're like, cool. like, do the rest of this and this can be your new normal, but you have to engage with the rest of this. So the other treatments we use once we get past the ketamine infusion therapy is we do transcranial magnetic stimulation. TMS is an MRI coil that's in either a wand or a helmet. And that MRI coil creates a magnetic field under the surface of your scalp, so in your brain tissue. And depending on where we stimulate, like for depression, for instance, we stimulate the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, and that reinforces the neural connections where we're stimulating. So, you know, just imagine that your brain is a music festival and you've got PTSD. What happens in the brain, if we were to just like take a cross section of this thing and look at how it's firing, you would see an underactive prefrontal cortex. So this, your prefrontal cortex is a stage, just has like a little dinky megaphone at this music festival, and your amygdala, your fight, flight, or freeze, that emotional response that like we're bam, 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 you know, from all of that to that hyperactivity when you're, and hypersensitivity when you're overseas, like that amygdala is a full on like Coachella stage with giant ass speakers. And when you get triggered, boom, the sound system turns on and it's blasting in your face, and your amygdala hijacks your lived experience. You get thrown into a panic attack or a rage. So what we're doing with TMS is we're building up the number of speakers on your prefrontal cortex's stage so that it can shout down your amygdala and tell it to shut the fuck up. And that, you know, it's a very oversimplified kind of analogy, but it allows you to take more control over your state. You don't just get sucked into the depression hole or thrown into a panic attack or a rage episode. You can observe the trigger instead of being immediately reactive to it. So highly, highly useful. It gives you a lot more control. The third one, hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And, you know, we touched on it a little bit, but for those who don't know what HBOT is, you get into a chamber that is sealed. We increase the pressure in the chamber. We typically get up to, you know, 1.5 to 1.75 atmospheres absolute. I don't know what the diving distance is off the top of my head, but it's a diving term.
I used to know
what the pressure is. Yeah. I was in a Navy class. I should know these things. My hair's not long anymore. So basically, we bring you down to pressure and you breathe in concentrated oxygen. Now, what that does is not only does it decrease the amount of inflammation just physically because you're under pressure, so it decreases the amount of inflammation going on in the body. It also hyperoxygenates your blood plasma. So if we think about any of these disorders that are causing inflammation in the brain, that's really serious because the blood vessels in your brain are very, very small. It's not like we're tapping into a femoral artery that's like a Chinese superhighway.
Right.
We're talking about small little country road blood vessels that with just a small amount of inflammation, all of a sudden you've completely shunted it off. And that creates a number of issues. If your cells can't get oxygen through your red blood cells, they have to switch over to a different way of making energy. They go from what's called cellular respiration over to anaerobic glycolysis. That's a fermentation process. It's how cancer cells make energy. It's incredibly waste producing, and it causes a lot more knock-on inflammation because of the toxic nature of creating that energy. So you can see pretty quickly here how we can get into this kind of inflammatory doom spiral.
Oh yeah.
What hyperbaric does is instead of relying on that red blood cell to get through that country road, we just build a damn pipeline. And by hyperoxygenating the liquid that your red blood cells travel along, we can bathe the brain in oxygen, and that allows all your cells to create far more ATP, because ATP is, you know, our cellular fuel. That allows your brain not only to branch out and create those new synaptic connections, but it allows your brain to start cleaning itself.
Okay.
And so that's a primary reason that HBOT is so effective. And it's also one of the reasons that we have to use other things too. We have to prime those new connections with TMS. We have to give the brain more fertilizer with ketamine. So when we use all of these things together, we see patients get better really fast, and they stay better because we're giving the brain everything it needs to heal in the right environment. And you, when you couple that with culturally competent talk therapy, you can help rewire the brain in a really constructive way. Because this is one of the things, and we'll get onto the psychedelics topic, I'm sure. Neuroplasticity is something that everybody talks about with psychedelics. It increases neuroplasticity. Oh, that's so great. Actually, no. Neuroplasticity is a double-edged sword. Neuroplasticity can be either good or bad. You are putting Miracle-Gro on the ability to create new connections. If you're not in the right frame of mind and it's not in a controlled environment, you can easily go down a deep dark hole and make things worse.
Yeah, if you're using that analogy that you just said, if you put Miracle-Gro on your lawn and it's full of weeds already, well, you're just going to get more weeds. You know, it's not going to help a healthy lawn come through. You have to get in a place where you get rid of some of those weeds, and now the grass can start coming in, right?
We gotta use the bright red blood to let the green grass grow.
There it is.
Now you're
talking to the grunt in me.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's the all the infantry guys are just like, everyone. Same warm, Big Ben.
they're coming out of the woodwork now just to hear the rest of this conversation. But one thing before we get into like psychedelics and all the other things that you're just mentioning there, one thing that you mentioned a couple times, the culturally competent talk therapy.
Yeah,
if I can get that all out in one go, describe what that is, because some of the listeners may not be familiar with that term.
Yeah, so what I mean by culturally competent talk therapy is someone who has experience working with veterans and first responders. Why is that important? Because not everybody who gets into the therapy field can handle all of the trauma. Some people get in it for like marriage and family counseling. Some people get into therapy to talk to kids. It takes a special kind of therapist to handle some of the violent shit that we say. You know, I had a patient not too long ago. He was, you know, on the teams, you know, in CAG. And he's like, yeah, man, I didn't mind killing people. Like, I don't have PTSD from that. I have PTSD from watching my buddies get fucked up. Like, I could kill someone really easily. If you say that to a normal therapist who's not indoctrinated, if you will, into this kind of line of thinking, into this warrior mindset, You can traumatize your therapist.
Yeah.
Dude, and I have heard horror stories of, and this has never happened in any of our programs, thank God, because we don't hire these people, but you know, where like a cop will tell, you know, stories of like a shootout to a therapist and it traumatizes the therapist. They're like, oh, well, did you feel bad for killing that person? Like, no, absolutely not. I'd do it again. Right. In fact, if you lined up like 14 of these dudes, I'd just pop them in the head once one a piece. Line them up, knock them down. That's totally fine. And that kind of mentality freaks people out. It freaks some people out anyway. Mm-hmm. So you need to be in an environment where you can express this deep, dark shit and not, you know, end up on an M1 hold where you're going to the psych hospital end up on another FBI watch list.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't want to end up in a padded room and, you know, having all that kind of stuff going on either.
Dude, so, straight jackets chafe my nipples, man.
So I'm glad that you got to explain, you know, kind of the process that you guys work through. And is that like the typical process, you know, starting with the ketamine, then the magnetic stimulation, and then going through, is that pretty much the same for most people, or do you kind of prescribe different things for different people?
Different strokes for different folks, for sure. Not everybody needs the whole kit and caboodle. We tend to go that way for like our more acute patients, or if someone's got TRICARE, we have one of the best TRICARE programs in the country. I dare say the best. So, you know, TRICARE reimburses quite a bit more for transcranial magnetic stimulation than the other major insurance carriers. So what we do is, instead of pocketing that, we give away a bunch of our treatments for free. So if someone comes in and they have TRICARE and they qualify for TMS, which is typically 3 failed antidepressant medications, we throw in the 6 sessions of ketamine and however many TMS sessions, we throw that many hyperbaric sessions in for free. So typically that's anywhere from 30 to 60 free hyperbaric sessions. So, you know, we're giving away, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in treatment to veterans who really need it.
Yeah. No, that's awesome that you guys are doing that, because there's some folks out there who don't have the means necessarily to do that, and the VA isn't jumping on board right away with all of these things. So some of them they're getting there slowly but surely, but hopefully the next few years they'll get more on board with other things. But you did mention some of the psychedelics too, and I just want to kind of preface this with for the listeners that some of the things that are out there may or may not be legal and all that. So keep all that in mind. You don't want to find yourself in jail or anything like that by doing these things that may not be 100% legal. You don't want to make your situation even worse. So but there's movement on these things as far as the legislation and things like that to make them legal, and so that they can be used more freely than they are right now. So
maybe in Arizona.
Yeah, well,
here in Colorado, it's psilocybin's legal.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, yeah. You can. They just issued the first clinical licensure for psilocybin in the state a few weeks ago. Oh. So it's rolling out pretty fast.
Okay. Yeah. And I know Texas is doing something too. I don't know.
With Ibogaine.
Yeah. I don't know the details on all that yet, but.
You're familiar with Ibogaine?
I've heard of it. I don't know all the particulars of it. This is all a new world to me. So I'm one of those kids like you were talking about that I grew up in the DARE program. Yep. I was in high school. I was one of the ambassadors for the DARE program. I'd go to talk to the little kids and other grades and stuff. So I was all 100% in on that. And I still am. I don't do drugs or anything like that. Like it's,
oh well, yeah.
So I don't really
sounds
know
like
much
you just,
about
you
this.
You just don't have any experience. That's all.
I have none. Exactly. So I'm curious. I want to know more about what's going on, what developments are being made, and what the research is saying too.
Yeah. Well, the research is saying that fucking lion lied to you.
Yeah. Big time.
Ecstasy. You know what? Ecstasy doesn't put holes in your brain. You know what does? The benzodiazepines they prescribed you for your PTSD. Those will put holes in your brain.
Sure.
Long-term use of those will definitely hurt you, and they are very, very difficult to get off of. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to talk about in psychedelics. I think a good place to start is, how can people engage with this in a safe manner?
Yeah.
And what are some of the contraindications? So what are some of the flags that say hey, you shouldn't do this shit? So the first thing, if you're going to engage in these sorts of things, make sure it's a reputable source. You do need to check online or come to a place like Colorado where this is legal and there are clinical practitioners that are performing this, because there is a level of support that's needed. This is not a magic pill. Mm-hmm. You can have a very powerful experience. That very powerful experience can be either positive or it can also be very challenging, a very negative experience,
yeah,
which can also be formative. But you have to be ready for that. This is not something you should just jump into, especially if, someone like yourself, you don't have any experience with these altered states of consciousness. They are very different. You will see a lot of different things depending on which one of these substances you interact with. So ensuring that you're going to a reputable source like Heroic Hearts Project, great example of doing it right. Taking guys down who have PTSD, making sure that they're healthy, that they're mentally able to do so, and then putting them into more of a ceremonial framework. And that's a much safer framework. It really prepares the mind to engage in this, especially when you're doing it in a group. So I would say for anybody who's interested in this stuff, check out Heroic Hearts. They do a great job. I love Jesse and that team. And making sure that you're doing this in a facilitated manner with a no shit babysitter. I'm not talking about, your friend or your Uncle Fred who's like, oh, don't worry, I'll just do them with you and we'll just do it at the house. Not a great idea.
No, right.
Let's talk contraindications. If you have a traumatic brain injury, you need to be very, very careful about doing large doses of psychedelics. When you do large doses of psychedelics, it increases the electrical output of your brain by several fold, by two standard deviations.
Okay.
This was documented in an LSD study I believe it was back in 2010. You could see the images like on the internet of what happens under an MRI when you're on LSD.
Yeah.
If you have a TBI, like a serious TBI, and you do that, you are passing a dramatic amount of electricity through a short. All of that inflammatory process that's going on in the brain gets in the way. You're asking for a dissociative panic attack.
Got it.
That lasts anywhere from 5 to 12 hours, but it'll feel like it lasts forever.
Yeah.
Because there's quite a bit of time dilation that can go on.
Sure.
And that's not to scare anybody away. There are serious applications for this medicine, for these medicines, but we just need to be aware of what's going on. Another thing that people need to know, if you're taking SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, they will not work. So like psilocybin, LSD, MDMA will be far less effective. There's a lot of knock-on risks with doing that as well. So people need to understand that SSRIs have a blocking function for those drugs. So yeah, I think that's kind of hitting the high notes. You know, if someone's interested and you don't have access to these, you know, to these like trusted sources where you can go down and do it in a ceremonial fashion, and you still are really, really desperate to get the benefits, I recommend starting on a microdose. And let's just start with psilocybin, because that is the one that gets the most headlines about microdosing. First of all, understand the genus of the mushroom you are taking. Much like marijuana, mushrooms have a panoply of different effects. Something like a penis envy that's more of a body high would be something that would benefit someone with depression more, especially at a microdose, versus like a golden teacher strain, which would be better for someone with anxiety. It's more of a head high, more of a increases like visual acuity and colors more. But like, you really got to understand what you're doing and start low. And when I say low, I'm talking sub 200 milligrams. So that's like a double zero capsule that's full of a powdered mushroom. Also, if you are engaging in these things and you're doing it, you know, on your own, first of all, have a trusted source. And two, don't just eat mushrooms. Stop doing drugs like a fucking pilgrim. Like, grind them up and put them into like double zero capsules and weigh them. You need to understand how much of a substance you are putting in your body. That is the smart way to do it. Now, I want to be clear, I'm not advocating for anybody to do illegal drugs or any of that, but as a harm reduction option, you should always understand what you are doing and how much you are doing.
Right.
And ensuring that if you are going to do it in a non-ceremonial space, in a non-guarded space, that you're in the proper set and setting to engage with these things. Anytime you're doing psychedelics, they can act as a magnifier. So if you go into these experiences in a negative frame, that frame is going to be projected and magnified. So being very, very cognizant of those things can help reduce potential harm.
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to your point, it's probably best if you do it in that kind of more in a
ceremonial
setting. Yeah, ceremonial, yeah. Or some setting that's with a trusted, you know, group of people who can guide you through that, because like you said, your experiences may vary, and you want to make sure that you're not doing it alone, that you're not sitting there by yourself and then all of a sudden you're having this really bad negative experience and God knows what you might end up doing, and that's probably not the best place to be in. You know, again, it's all at this point still, you know, working its way through, and people are still trying to figure out where it's going to fit into the whole scheme of things as far as, you know, future treatment goes. But, you know, there's been some progress on that front. And, you know, I know the VA is starting to look at it as well as a potential option for folks. They move slow as molasses, so I really, really not
slow as Manassas in an ice storm.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not really holding my breath, you know, thinking that that's going to be something that happens anytime soon. But you never know. They've come up with some surprises before too. So
we'll see how this administration handles things.
We'll see. You know, it seems like things are moving quickly with the yep. administration. You know, whether you think that's good or bad, that's another conversation for another day. But, you know, my point is that, you know, things are changing, things are moving, and I think eventually this will become something that is more mainstream, and hopefully that will get people away from some of those more harmful medications that you were talking about that really yeah. eat the holes in your brain, and that's not where we want to be either. So
no, we want to take medications that we don't have to take all the time, and that yeah. help expand rather than contract your state of consciousness, and rather than making your entire world gray.
Right.
Which is, you know, one of the common side effects that's reported from selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs.
Yeah, exactly. For the folks who are listening, they want to get in touch with you, find out a little bit more about what you guys do, and, you know, maybe even, you know, use some of your services. Where can they go to find out more information and get, you know, access to you guys and reach out for more support?
Yeah, so if people are looking for me, the easiest place to find me is on LinkedIn, Sam J. Peterson. It's got a headshot of this mug. I'm pretty damn responsive on that platform. The best place to find more information about our clinic and some of our programs is www.mindspadenver.com. So mindspadenver.com. I don't pronounce my D's very well, so
gotcha.
It's not mind spa, it's mind.
Mind is in like the thing that's yeah. in your head. Yep, got it.
Yeah, mind is in the thing that's in your brain. So yeah, check out our website. We've got quite a bit of information on our programs, and there are a number of ways to get in touch with our clinic on the website there, whether it be our phone number, or if you're interested, you can fill out, you know, our new patient paperwork and make an appointment with one of our providers.
Excellent. Well, I will have links to all of that in the show notes for the listeners so they can reach out and find out more information and get, you know, hopefully get the support that they need, you know, whether or not they're finding it through the VA or they're, you know, doing it on their own. However it is that they're trying to get support, you know, I think it's important to know that there are options out there that exist beyond the walls of the VA, and that there are people out there that exist beyond the walls of the VA, our support to folks. And, you know, especially for people who are sitting there thinking to themselves, I've tried everything. There's no hope left for me because I've tried it all. I mean, if you haven't tried this, there's no hope left for me because I've tried it all. I mean, if you know, whether it's the ketamine or, you know, the hyperbaric, give it a try. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I want people to know is, like, that's the whole reason I do this is, like, if you're in that deep, dark hole right now, know yeah. that there is hope. You don't have to feel this way all the time. We have the ability to treat these issues. We have so many tools. It's not even, I haven't even gotten into some of the other things that are possible, like personalized EEG, guided TMS. That's a, you know, conversation for another time.
Sure.
Or neurofeedback. There is so much that we can do to help get you out of that space, help heal and rewire the brain. The traditional medical establishment has not done a lot of us any favors. And you don't have to be bound by the outcomes that someone within that establishment is throwing in your face.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of it is profit-driven decisions that get made, and they don't make money if you're not a patient. So, I mean,
yeah, the best customer is a recurring customer.
That's right. Yeah, they figured out the recurring revenue model a long time ago, I think, and, you know, the rest of the world's just waking up to it. So
that's another podcast.
I think so. Yeah, I think we'll end it here. So Sam, thank you so much for, you know, sharing your story, your background, and what it is that you guys do now. I think it's awesome work that you're doing. I think we need more people out there like you to continue doing this type of work and raising awareness for folks to let them know that there is hope, that there are other options out there. So thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that, man. That's, you know, we're just trying to make this system better.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you.
Cheers.